John Zern is a dermatologist in Danbury, Connecticut. And when he leaves the office, his phone doesn't stop ringing.
People will call me up, you know, 10 o'clock at night. Oh, my God, I have a giant zit. I have this big presentation, or I have a big meeting tomorrow. Can I come over and get an injection? And they'll come over in the kitchen, you know, I'll like sit them down and then basically, you know, and give them an injection, a Kenalog right there in the house.
His living room couch frequently serves as an exam table, but he knows that treating friends and family is not without its perils. A biopsy of a spot on his uncle's lip, for example, didn't go too well.
I took the specimen and handed him a piece of gauze and turned around to put it into the, you know, into the container. And by the time I came back, he was bleeding all over the place. Fortunately, I only got him and not my couch, but it was a close call.
But like many physicians, he is still not deterred from doing a friend or family member a favor.
You know, lots of times it's just friends or somebody, you know, something like that that just wants me to look at something. So I, you know, I'm like only too happy to say, yeah, just come over.
The medical ethics community, however, strongly discourages this practice.
The American Medical Association has addressed this since they put out early guidelines in, I think, 1847. And they said that generally physicians should not treat themselves or members of their immediate family.
This is Catherine Gold, assistant professor of family medicine and OBGYN at the University of Michigan, who does research on the topic.
I have not come across any associations that have publicly disagreed with this.
She says these guidelines are in place for good reason.
You may have a lot of emotional investment in their care, and it may cloud your ability to make a good judgment. So you might treat them differently than you would treat a patient in your office. For example, you might order extra tests for the family member that you wouldn't order for somebody else.
And there's also the possibility that the physician might avoid broaching certain topics with their own friends and family members.
Sometimes we're talking about sensitive issues. If someone has a sexually transmitted disease, it's very awkward with a family member to go into a lot of detail with them, even though with a patient, you would have those discussions.
This is particularly true when it comes to mental health. For example, physicians are commonly asked to prescribe antidepressant medications for their colleagues, and many find it challenging to ask the necessary follow-up questions.
So you might or might not ask a physician who wanted an antidepressant off the books, if they were feeling suicidal, that might feel like you were kind of overstepping your bounds.
There are also potential conflicts of interest that may influence a provider's judgment.
There, in some situations, might be certain benefits to the doctor. I mean, if your friend asks you to prescribe something and you do, it makes them happy. And in some cases, you know, you help out a colleague and then maybe that colleague provides referrals back to you.
Informal healthcare is also fraught with potential legal ramifications.
If there is something bad that happens, there's no documentation of what occurred. You haven't documented that the patient gave you informed consent to provide this procedure or this treatment. And so you really don't have any legal ground to stand on should something go wrong.
Despite all of this, the practice is far from infrequent. A survey of over 400 physicians found that 83% of them had prescribed a medication to a family member. And even Catherine Gold admits that she asked a colleague for care back when she was a resident.
I got quite ill. I had a skin infection and was running a fever. And I just asked one of my colleagues, another resident who was in the same lecture that I was in, to write me for this antibiotic. And so the colleague asked me a couple questions and then wrote the prescription. There was no physical exam. Nothing went onto the books formally. It seemed at the time like a perfectly fine thing to do, and I hadn't really thought through all the potential ethical complications.
It's actually not terribly surprising that she did this without a second thought. It turns out that physicians in training do not universally learn about this topic. One survey of residents found that only 13% were aware of any ethical guidelines regarding prescription writing for non-patients.
It may not be addressed in some curriculums. There are a lot of ethical issues that we try to talk about, and this may, in some places, be seen as less important than other ethical issues, and so not addressed at all. I think there's great opportunity to address it, not only in medical school, but also when we're training residents. Since we know residents prescribe for each other, and it's the first time that they can actually sign their name to a prescription.
One barrier to stricter rules or more education on the topic maybe that physicians are not all on the same page. Gold says that while researching and giving presentations on the topic, she heard quite a mix of opinions from her colleagues.
There were some physicians who said, yes, this is exactly right, we should be doing it more. There were physicians who said, look, I'm a doctor and I paid the dues and I should be able to write these prescriptions or take care of minor things. There were physicians who said, I'm the best doctor for my family. I know the most about them. I have their values at heart. I should take care of them.
At the University of Michigan, Gold has worked with a committee to create internal rules for treatment of friends and family. And even her fellow committee members recognize the nuances.
Virtually all or almost all of the physicians in the room at some point had written a prescription for someone or done something informally. And we all recognize that and acknowledge that.
She adds that context is important. For example, it may be acceptable to refill a chronic medication for a family member as long as the primary care physician is promptly notified.
I try not to be absolute in coming down in sort of black and white because I think it's such a nuanced issue, but I do try to get people to think about the potential ways that this might be problematic, both for patients and for physicians.
Gold says that physicians can still help their loved ones without getting directly involved in their care, for example, by guiding them through healthcare decisions and being their advocate. For The Pulse, I'm Elizabeth Tracy.